Good evening. I now call to order the Shoreline City Council regular meeting for Monday, September 15th, 2025. Will you please join me in the flag salute? Thank you. Will the clerk please call the roll?
Mayor Roberts?
Here.
Deputy Mayor Mark?
Present.
Councilmember Ramsdale?
Present.
Councilmember Scully?
Present.
Councilmember Adamasu?
Present.
Councilmember Poby?
Here.
Councilmember Robertson?
Here.
Thank you. On behalf of the Shoreline City Council, I proclaim September 15th through October 15th, 2025 as Hispanic Heritage Month in the City of Shoreline and encourage all community members to find ways to honor Latin heritage throughout the year. September 15th through 21st is Diaper Need Awareness Week. I'd like to encourage the residents of Shoreline to donate to diaper banks and drives and support organizations that collect and distribute diapers to families struggling with diaper need. And finally, September 17th through 23rd is Constitution Week, with Constitution Day being September 17th in the City of Shoreline. We ask our residents to reaffirm the ideals of the framers of the Constitution that they had in 1787 by vigilantly protecting the freedoms guaranteed to us through this guardian of our liberties, remembering that lost rights may never be regained. The next item is approval of tonight's agenda. If there are no objections or comments, the agenda is adopted by unanimous consent. The next on the agenda is the report of the city manager, Mr. Ellington.
Good evening, council. I'm excited to share an important update on the 145th Street and I-5 interchange project. After 24 days of construction, the Northeast 145th Street and I-5 ramp will be reopening this Thursday, September 18th. Additionally, the roundabout on the west end of the I-5 overpass will be open and operational in a single lane configuration while construction continues in the area. This is a huge milestone for this project and improving overall mobility and safety in the corridor. The second roundabout on the east end is on track to open in early 2026. For more up-to-date project information, visit engage.shorelinewa.gov/145th corridor. Welcoming week is in full swing. Join us this Tuesday, September 16th for a button making for all event at the Shoreline Library. Design and create your own pinback buttons using the library's button machine. This is a drop-in program open to all ages. This fun craft project is part of Welcoming Week, an annual campaign that invites communities around the globe to host events that deepen understanding and connection among community members. Learn more about Welcoming Week at www.welcomingweek.org. Visit our newest artist in residence, Gigi Silverman, during their open studio hours this Friday and Sunday. See their exposition, Artifacts from a Future Disaster, during their residency. Learn more about the artists and the city's artist in residence program by visiting shorelinewa.gov/art. And finally, just a couple of reminders. The Planning Commission will meet this Thursday, September 18th in the Council Chambers at 7 p.m. The next council meeting will be Monday, September 22nd at 7 p.m. The Parks, Recreation, and Cultural Services Tree Board's next meeting is Thursday, September 25th at 7 p.m. And for more information about these upcoming meetings, please visit shorelinewa.gov/calendar. And that concludes the city manager's report.
Thank you. Are there any council reports this evening? Councilmember Adamasu.
Thank you, Mayor. Myself, Deputy Mayor Mork, City Manager Ellington, and city staff had a tour of the Oaks, which is run by Lake City Partners. This former nursing home transitions unhoused individuals out of tents or on the street and works with partners to find placement in permanent supportive housing. Each bed is usually full. It's rare to even see one bed empty. The need for housing is greater than housing units available. With federal funding cuts to Medicaid, they project our unhoused population to grow considerably. Then today, myself and City Manager Ellington met with Executive Director and staff at the Dale Turner YMCA and discussed ways in which the city and the Y can partner more in the future to meet the needs of our community members. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Ramsdale.
Thank you, Mayor. This past Saturday, myself and Councilmember Scully attended just a fantastic event up in Edmonds that was sponsored by the North Sound Bicycle Advocates. The event really started with a group of riders starting at Shoreline City Hall and another group of riders starting at Edmonds, and we all met at the Mathe Ballinger Park in Edmonds. The attendees were also members of the Edmonds City Council, the Cascade Bicycle Club. Congressman Rick Larson was there as well. The kind of topics that were discussed were the possible pedestrian cycling bridge connecting Shoreline and Edmonds portions of the interurban over 205th. I used the opportunity to kind of mention to the folks that staff here in Shoreline is putting together a mid-biennial budget request that is also supported by Councilmember Scully and myself that would connect the missing section of the interurban on 200th Street with the protected bicycle lanes. And we know that that is a really, if anybody cycles and has cycled on 200th Street, it is a white knuckle section of the interurban. For if you want to go to the Edmonds part of the interurban, you have to go on 200th, and it's not a lot of fun. So this would be an opportunity to really protect cyclists' lives. And so that will be a mid-by topic that will be presented to council in November. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilmember Scully.
Thank you. I had a chance to meet with Logan Schmidt, who's the master builders of King County's representative to Seattle and Shoreline. And I'm talking about this now because I see a lot of planning staff here. He asked for the meeting to share statistics that the state has produced on how fast we process permits. We are 240% behind on some of them, but he assured me we are not the worst, not by a long shot, and that everybody has work to do. He had very high praise for Mr. Bauer and for the work that's being done to sort of reinvent the permitting process, and he gave me some sort of top three things he would like to see to get permits moving faster, which I've shared with Mr. Ellington. So I wanted to thank you, Mr. Bauer, and all the folks who are working with you, and of course, we have a long way to go in that area.
Deputy Mayor Mark.
Thank you, Mayor. I attended the Solid Waste Advisory Committee, in which we talked about the Cedar Hills landfill and the changes that are being made to make it so that it'll last to 2040. That's as long as they think they can get it, so we've got to come up with another plan. Thank you.
Thank you. Next on the agenda is public comment. This is the portion of the meeting where members of the public may address the City Council on agenda items or any other matter pertaining to city business for 3 minutes or less. How many people are signed up tonight?
No one has signed up.
Does anyone wish to provide public? No one signed up online?
Correct. No one.
Does anyone in the audience wish to provide public comment tonight? Okay. Seeing that, we will move on. The next item is approval of the consent calendar. Is there a motion?
I move approval of the consent calendar.
Second.
There's a motion and a second to approve the consent calendar. Will the clerk please conduct a vote?
Councilmember Pobie.
Aye.
Councilmember Ramsdale.
Aye.
Councilmember Scully.
Aye.
Mayor Roberts.
Aye.
Councilmember Robertson.
Aye.
Councilmember Automasu.
Aye.
Deputy Mayor Mark.
Aye.
That motion passes unanimously. The next item on the agenda is action on preliminary formal unit lot subdivision number PLN 2310107, dividing one existing parcel into 23 unit lots at 808, 812, 820, and 826 North 145th Street. Kate Lee is going to join us at the presenter table. Welcome.
Good evening.
Did you want to do ex parte the checklist before the staff report or after?
We'll do it now. We do this as this is a quasi judicial proceeding. We do have questions that every council member should take a look at, and then if please disclose anything, or if you answer any of these correctly, or any of these in a manner that requires disclosure. I think we've all seen these before. So is there anyone who needs to disclose anything at this point? Okay, so we'll go forward.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. As previously noted, I'm Kate Lee. I'm a planner in our Planning and Community Development Department, here to present this item, a proposed 23-lot preliminary formal subdivision. This application was vested to the code in place when it was complete on November 4th, 2023. The code at that time required a public hearing before the hearing examiner, who makes a recommendation to City Council, who makes the decision on this application. So that's why it's here before you tonight. Since that time, the code changed in January of this year so that the hearing examiner will make the final decision instead of City Council. So this slide shows the basic information on the site. It's a 0.92-acre site located at the northwest corner of North 145th Street and Whitman Avenue North. Four detached single-family homes were recently demolished in April of this year. The site is zoned Neighborhood Business, or NB, and is within the Westminster Triangle neighborhood. On the left shows a vicinity map. This aerial image is from 2023, so it still shows the detached single-family homes that are now demolished. On the right is a zoning map. The south side of North 145th Street is in the city of Seattle, and the north side is in the city of Shoreline. This slide shows the proposed lot layout. The lots will be oriented north to south, facing North 145th Street. Lots 1 through 11 have frontage on North 145th, while lots 12 through 23 are tucked behind those and the access track. There are two tracks. Track A is an access, open space, and utility track that touch all the unit lots, and track B is an open space track between the northern lots 12 and 23 and the property to the north. The site development, wastewater, and building permits have all been substantially approved. The right-of-way permit is still being reviewed by city staff. Prior to issuance of all permits, the right-of-way permit needs to be approved, and this proposed subdivision needs to be approved by City Council. So this slide just goes over the history of this application. The notice of application and notice of public hearing each included a mailing to owners of property within 500 feet. A sign was posted on the site and a notice was published in the Seattle Times. No public comments were received during the notice of application comment period, nor were any public comments received at the public hearing held on August 8th. The proposed subdivision has met the applicable requirements of the Shoreline Municipal Code. Impacts from this subdivision will be mitigated by payment of impact fees for transportation, fire, and parks. Those are required prior to building permit issuance. Stormwater management improvements for increased hardscape coverage are required, and construction of right-of-way improvements. It will serve the public interest because denser development improves walkability and reduces car dependency. It will create 19 additional housing units, helping to address our regional housing shortage. And density and walkability can reduce greenhouse gas emissions, traffic congestion, and costs for public services. The hearing examiner recommends approval of the proposed subdivision subject to 17 conditions listed in attachment A to the staff report. and planning and community development staff agrees with this recommendation. And that concludes my presentation. Here's a potential motion that the council could make.
Thank you. Does anyone have any questions? Or is there a motion first? I guess. Council Member Scully.
I move the council approve the preliminary formal subdivision application PLN 230107 subject to the conditions listed in attachment A.
Second.
Thank you. Council Member Scully, to your motion.
I hope we get out of the business of reviewing these because, quite frankly, the hearing examiner does a great job, and I don't see that we have a lot to add to the process. It looks to me like this is a logical decision, and I support it.
Councilmember Ramsdale.
Thank you, Mayor. I think this is very much in favor of this development. I do have one question, though, and that's across the street, there's the post office, and there's a pre-K school right on the other side of Whitman and 145th. I noticed that there's the entrance is on Whitman, and there's another exit or entrance on 145th. And I'm just kind of wondering, it's such a heavily trafficked area, I think there might be some issues with any kind of attempts to enter the 145th Street entrance for any kind of eastbound cars wanting to turn left into the development. And has that? That was my only question. I said otherwise. I mean that it's been that those four lots have been a blight in the neighborhood. They've attracted a lot of squatters and a lot of illicit activity on that. So this will be a huge improvement, but I just was wondering if that's the only question I have about the traffic issues.
Yeah, the plan that's shown here may not provide the level of detail or may be difficult to read because it does contain a lot of information, but the only vehicle entrance is off of Whitman. And then what you're seeing on the part of the site that's abutting 145th Street, part of that would be a turnaround for a garbage truck that comes in, so it's like a hammerhead, and then part of it will just be an open space area and landscaping that's actually touching 145th. So yeah, only vehicle access from Whitman.
That is fantastic. Thanks. No objections to this proposal. Thank you.
Councilmember Adamasu.
Thank you, Ms. Lee. Yeah, I think this is a great project to provide more. Is it 2 and 3 bedroom homes?
I don't want to misstate, but okay. Yeah, I think it's probably 2 to 4 bedrooms.
Okay,
yeah.
Great. We need more of those here in Shoreline. My only question was about the report talked about Public Works has signed off on the existing water main. And I'm wondering, is the existing water main large enough for 23 connections? And it said it needed to comply with the conditions, and I couldn't really find conditions. I found where it said the developer must provide sanitary sewer developer extension. Does that mean there's going to be more mains or extensions off the mains?
Yeah, so two things. The potable water is provided by Seattle Public Utilities, or SPU, and I believe they are requiring a water main extension on this project. And then separate from that would be the City of Shoreline, our wastewater requirements. And I can, I can get the details. I don't know if it says we're requiring a developer extension. That's what I think we're requiring, but I would need to look at the plans to confirm it.
Okay, and in other developments like this, where you have an existing wastewater main, have you had problems with a lot of hookups to that, with a lot of townhomes? Have we seen any problems with other developments, or are things pretty good there wastewater wise?
Any kind of improvements that need to be made to either the wastewater system in terms of a developer extension, so increasing the pipe size, mm-hmm. that would be required as approval of this project. And then separate from that would be the SPU potable water requirements. They just need to make sure, that those two utilities are being coordinated, so our public works staff will review the permits to make sure that, the wastewater work and the water main work, that those are all lining up and that there's room for each of those utilities to exist in the right of way, whatever the sizing requirements are.
All right, thank you very much.
Yep.
Councilmember Ramsdell.
Sorry, I had one other question. I think I remember seeing like one of the early proposals of this development would have some sort of like retail on the main floor, and then I said, whatever happened to that? Because that was something that I was kind of excited about to see early on.
Yeah, so the developer that's developing the site, MSR Communities, they took two different early designs in for pre-application meetings with city staff. One was more of a multifamily concept, which is allowed in this zone. I don't recall if they were proposing ground floor commercial as part of that at the time or not, so I'd have to look back. And then this was the second design concept that they were looking at, which is attached single family homes that are vertically attached with a common wall, you know, and each unit is individually owned, so three floors owned by the same person and then attached with a common wall. So yeah, there would not be any retail or commercial component in this proposal.
A little disappointed, but I still think this is a huge improvement over what was currently what was there in the past. Thank you.
Yep.
Councilmember Poby.
Thank you very much for the presentation. And forgive my ignorance a little bit. I'm not a design reading expert. I'm a numbers person. I'm just curious, though. Number one, what's the distance between the bottom, that space in there, what was the distance in between there?
Which two points?
The two at the bottom on the screen.
The 145th
axis. Yes. I see 228.81. What was that?
The distance between like this corner and the access drive?
Uh-huh.
Looks like it's about 30 feet.
30 feet. So okay, let me just get straight to my point. You see, on 185th, I kind of dislike what the developer did over there. And it's sad. Maybe I have to stand and demonstrate to you. So you have building here, building there, and you're backing up, and you have to squeeze in. And we are promoting creating a livable environment for people. Who determines whether this land was going to take about 23 units instead of, let's say, 8? Who does that?
So when a developer is proposing a project to the city, as long as it meets all of our requirements in this zoning district, we don't have like a maximum number of units. So in the NB zone, the neighborhood business, there's no maximum or minimum number of units. It's based on the other development criteria, so the minimum setbacks, the maximum height. In this zone, we don't require tree retention, so it wouldn't be that for this site, but in a lot of the sites that are zoned MUR, it would be that.
Yeah, this is not even about trees, not for this evening. I'm looking at livable environment and creating spaces. I'm looking at the minimum, the lowest here is 696, and the highest is about 1,147. Is that the livable space?
Yeah, the lot sizes, that's what you're asking about, the lot sizes here. Are those the numbers?
Whether the size of, yes, of the homes.
Yeah, so the... I believe the sizes that you're seeing are just the lot sizes. So they're three stories. So they're going to have that living space stacked. The first floor is mostly going to be they have attached garages. So mostly it's going to be that on the first floor.
So the garage is not livable. And then you have...
They may have like a office space and a bathroom on the first floor and then two stories of living up above.
Okay. I don't have any problem. I think everybody on the council supports this. I don't have any problem with the development. I think we can do better by, you know, creating enough space and not boxing people into the reason I'm concerned about this is going to come onto the market and it's going to be $1 million. And I'm asking, okay, somebody's going to live in this space for $1 million. I love the development, all right, but my biggest concern is, okay, we're going to come in, and this is the space, and we're going to build 23. And the city doesn't get any, the city doesn't have anything to say.
This is one of our denser commercial zoning districts that does currently allow residential uses like townhouses and multifamily. So there's going to be other zoning districts that aren't as dense. But yeah, this is where we want the most density in the city, or one of the zones. It's right, it's right near the E line where we have Rapid Ride. So yeah, this is one of the parts of the city where we want denser forms of development.
Yeah, I get that. You had about 126 pages of a report for us to read. And I was reading, I was like, okay, hold on. Why is the city advocating for the best interest of our residents here? Because if we can contribute and make adjustments in things like this, then it's concerning. Let me clarify one more time. When the developer comes and says, I've seen a space, a land, and I want to build 800 units, the city doesn't make any amendments in terms of, okay, this is not feasible. Or well, we can build 800 units on this land?
There is a number of units that they just wouldn't be able to build, meeting all the other requirements of like maximum height and minimum setbacks and things of that nature. So it's those standards that are gonna help rein in the number of units. But yeah, the city typically would not say, if they're meeting all of the other code requirements that we have, that they have to build a lower number than what they're proposing.
I said finally, but Mayor, one more point. So criteria and then minimum requirements, you're talking about all, but I think the number one criteria should be livable spaces for me. Yeah. Thank you.
I will say that, council member, that the way that the city has an impact on how these codes are developed is through the comprehensive plan and the development code. That's where we set and we make those decisions about what spaces should be. We can be more permissive, more sort of regulatory, and say that you have to build this type of unit, or we can say in our code that we want to be, and what we have is more of a form-based design that says that give lots of flexibility to developers for building what they think makes sense on these properties. And so that is the opportunity. I mean, it's through the development code and through the comprehensive plan we have the opportunity to say and to what kind of units we want to see in the city. It's not through this kind of application process where for this particular development, this was vested in 2023 under the code at that time. We don't have the ability to come in and sort of offer new and say, you can't do this because they have rights under vesting. So we are limited into what we have, and the motion really is, and the decision point we have today is, do we approve the hearing examiner decision, or do we reject the hearing examiner decision? It's a binary choice at this point, if I'm correct.
Correct.
I do have one question, and then I know that Councilmember Scully and Councilmember Robertson have points that they'd like to address, but as we are thinking about, as we have decided already, the move that the hearing examiner is going to make these decisions in the future, it's not coming to council. In fact, there's going to be very limited quasi-judicial times when the council will act in a quasi-judicial manner moving forward. My question is sort of more about, is to what extent does the why does the hearing examiner add conditions sort of on a broader scale when we have a code that is prescriptive? It says what is allowed. Why, in thinking that presumably future hearing examiners may have conditions, under what circumstances does the hearing examiner add conditions to a permit?
Well, so these are different land use actions, and it's typical on our preliminary formal plats for conditions to be added. Staff will recommend that conditions be added, and the hearing examiner will usually accept those conditions. Sometimes they may add additional conditions. It's a way to ensure that when we get to the final plat stage, that everything has been done that needed to be done in order to approve that final plat, because this is just a approval of a preliminary concept. And so in between the time frame where this preliminary decision is made and they make an application for the final, there's certain improvements and other things that need to take place. So these conditions ensure that all of those improvements take place before a final plat can be approved.
But I mean, if there wasn't a final plat approval, I mean, certain things like frontage improvements have to be done anyway. So I'm just curious why some of these elements are added as conditions when they're required under the code.
I think in a technical sense, our code does say all of these things are required. All of these improvements are required. It's a helpful list for both staff and a developer to know these are the exact items. But yes, ultimately, our code says all of these things have to be provided regardless. I don't know if the city attorney has more to add.
In a nutshell, state law requires that a preliminary plat have conditions to make sure it mitigates and it covers all of the impacts of the plat. And because the infrastructure is not in there, this is a way that you set forth all of the requirements. And then when it gets to final plat, that is the recording where streets are dedicated, utilities are dedicated, and it serves as the basis for that subdivision. And then subsequently, if somebody wants to amend that plat, there's other requirements under state law of what they have to go through to be able to amend it, and that includes approval from all of the members that own a lot in that plat. So in a nutshell, it's state law that kind of requires this process, as well as there's an opportunity for people to come in and comment. And so that's the other thing that the hearing examiner does.
Okay, thank you. Councilmember Scully.
I think you said it well. I don't have anything to add.
Councilmember Robertson.
Yeah, I wanted to express my support, and also having lived in townhomes at two different points of my life, the only complaint is that there's a lot of stairs, so you get a little stair workout in, but it is surprisingly spacious and comfortable, and I think this is going to be a lovely project. And a short, hopefully not too long after this is complete, we should have a park about a quarter mile, you know, short walk or roll down the Interurban Trail. This is a stretch of the trail that has been problematic, as we know. And I just firmly believe that engaging it, activating it, getting more people on it is going to discourage some of the activities that we don't want on it. So it's all this stuff like wraps up in together, and it's going to be a very positive, positive moment for our city. Thanks.
Thank you. Any further comments? Okay, will the clerk please conduct a vote?
Councilmember Ramsdell.
Aye.
Deputy Mayor Mork.
Aye.
Councilmember Automasu.
Aye.
Councilmember Popey.
Aye.
Councilmember Robertson.
Aye.
Councilmember Scully.
Aye.
Mayor Roberts.
Aye. And that motion passes unanimously. The next item is on the agenda is discussion of ordinance number 1037, amending Shoreline Municipal Code Chapter 5.05 regarding the business license threshold. And there is a staff report. Welcome.
Good evening, Mayor, Deputy Mayor, Council Members. We're here to discuss the update to the business license minimum threshold. I will now pass it over to Johanna Miller, who is our Business and Occupation Tax Analyst.
Good evening, Mayor, Deputy Mayor, and Council. I am Johanna Miller. I'm the Business and Occupation Tax Analyst, and we'll be going over the business license minimum threshold update. The Association of Washington Cities adopted a business license model ordinance in 2018, which set the minimum threshold for needing a business license at $2,000 for outside city businesses. Shoreline chose to adopt that threshold for both inside and outside city businesses. In 2024, the AWC revisited this ordinance and decided to increase the minimum threshold to $4,000. And moving forward, the threshold will increase by CPIU Western every 4 years. And the flat fee for a business license is $40 in Shoreline. Proposed ordinance number 1037 updates the minimum threshold to $4,000 beginning January 1st of 2026. It also updates the minimum threshold moving forward every 4 years based on CPIU Western, capped at 5% per year with a maximum increase of no more than 20% every 4 years. And the threshold will apply to all business conducted within city limits. There is no financial impact associated with tonight's discussion. The budgetary impact will be minimal, with anticipated revenue decrease of less than $10,000 annually, and this change is already reflected in the 2026 budget. And there is no change in fees for Shoreline businesses. There's no action required at this time. Ordinance number 1037 is proposed for adoption at the September 29th meeting.
Thank you. Does anyone have any questions? Councilmember Scully.
Yeah, thank you. Anything we can do to reduce red tape and encourage businesses, particularly very small businesses, getting off the ground, I'm in favor of. So my question is whether, I mean, 4,000 isn't much. And I'm wondering if it makes sense to increase the threshold dramatically to 50 or 100,000 or something like that. And what I'm envisioning with this is the folks that are going to hit it with this most are probably the food trucks. Because 4,000 isn't much. They probably do that revenue in a couple of nights. And if it's, say, an Edmonds-based food truck, they want to do one night in Shoreline or two nights in Shoreline a year. It's not a huge disincentive, but it is a disincentive, and it's something they got to jump through, and they get in trouble if they don't. And I'm just wondering what advantage we get from requiring a business license at 4,000 versus much more.
I mean, we get information on like the economic activity that is happening in Shoreline, you know, to maybe understand, you know, where we may, you know, need to focus some time and energy on certain businesses, you know, in order to support them. So that's part of it.
I don't think this is a giant deal either way, and I will certainly go with council, but it just seems to me that this is red tape we don't really need, and the benefits of getting that information to me is not, it isn't that much. And I would rather see folks be able to, Ms. Kane.
We do have an exemption for, I think, food trucks under 5,000, or retail sales under 5,000. So just pointing that out.
The extra 1,000 will make all the difference. If there's not a general sentiment on council that this is something council wants, then I'm fine with it as it is. But it does seem to me that every chance we get to make it easier to do business in Shoreline, we should take.
Councilmember Robertson.
Thank you. So the 2,000 bar already exists, so we're already doing this. It's
yes.
It's not new to red tape. It's
no.
Not more red tape. In theory, it's less because you have to reach that higher threshold to get there. I understand where the council member is going, and I think in this stage of our city's growth, understanding economic activity and helping to guide and shape where we go as a city, I think there will be some value to that. So I, you know, I don't have super strong feelings, but I will support this one. Thank you.
I do have one question. It was mentioned during the presentation that the fee is not increasing as proposed, and fee schedule is not even part of this ordinance. So
yeah.
There's no opportunity to even talk about at least change the fee during this ordinance. But my question is, when we adopted the business license registration, it was $40, and I think that was a decade ago or so.
Yes.
Even before the model ordinance, or I think it was before the model
2009.
Ordinance. 2009. Yeah, 2009 when that went into effect. But we look at when we think about our fee schedule, we generally, many of the things are tied to inflation, but this one has not. I'm wondering if there's any, and it was designed as a cost, I mean, the $40 was designed back then as a cost recovery. So I'm wondering if the costs to have the costs on our side have increased, and if it would make sense to increase the, if we do need to sort of think about increasing that fee to again have cost recovery for the services that we do provide.
Yes, we have thought about that, and we will be looking into that in the near future. Yes.
Deputy Mayor Mork.
Thank you. That was going to be my question. It is really important to update our fees. I completely agree with Councilmember Scully. We want to keep things a low burden, but increasing it with inflation, I think, is appropriate and at least to recover costs. So I would strongly encourage that. I appreciate that's not part of this motion. The AWC model law is, it does have it at this rate, correct?
Yes, yes. So it is a requirement that we have a threshold at least $4,000. So.
And they recommended that for some reason?
Yes, yeah.
Thank you.
Any further discussions? Yeah, okay. Thank you. Just sort of looking around, yes, I think there are nods to put this on the consent calendar at the appropriate time. And I think as we have our budget discussions coming up, I mean, that would be the appropriate time if the staff is ready to make a recommendation on the actual fee itself. Okay, right. With that, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And we are adjourned.